Hey there, Normalized Crime listeners. Thanks for tuning in to the bonus episode from our Patreon archives. If you want to hear the latest and greatest content, head over to patreon.com/normalizedcrime and subscribe to our Patreon today. Catch you on the other side.
You are listening to Normalized Crime, an in-depth look at gang life and all the effects that come along with it.
Hey, Normalized Crime Patreon members, we're back again. I'm Eric.
What's going on, Berto here?
Can never get that one right, but...
It never works for him, man. And these are people that are just, you know, they're coming to get some good content, and they can't even get a decent opening.
And then they're like, can the guy just get the intro out?
It's all right. What's going on, man?
Not a whole lot, just...
Just nope. Fucking up intros? All right.
And it's only ever this one, I want you to know.
Yeah, so. It is. It really is. All right, well, check it out. So I got something a little unique today, man. Something that I hope, you know, you can appreciate, the people out there can appreciate. I'm going to give something that I've never really talked about before. This element I've never really talked about before. And, you know, for my own personal reasons, obviously, you know, I've always gave the prerequisite about, you know, how me and my brother and, you know, Toot and Benny and how we, you know what I'm saying, we all made a decision to cooperate together. You know, we felt like our backs are against the wall, but it's not something that I could really ever be proud of, obviously, you know what I'm saying? Obviously, the decision was hard for me. I grew up all the way against that. And so, you know, just being honest about the situation, you know, I usually shy away from kind of talking about just the intricacies, man, of how it works at certain points of your cooperation. And what I mean by that is obviously like I had to give testimony, right? And so, you know, when I was approached to testify, you got to remember, only two people went to trial in our indictment. And one of them was this dude, Icy White, whom, like I said before, was a king for about 6 months. Was really doing it just to try to act like he was a part of somebody, but he wasn't. And then the other one was Beaky. And Beaky wasn't charged with any crimes on our indictment. He was only charged with the RICO conspiracy. And so, but they had other crimes waiting on him that they were going to charge him with. And, you know, Beaky was the final puzzle piece to our crew. And unfortunately, he didn't follow through like we all did. You know, the thing is, I wasn't out for, you know, Beaky ended up being charged with murder in the state. I wasn't out for his murder. I wasn't out for any of his other crimes. I wasn't out for anything that I knew he did personally, right? Or ordered him to do or anything like that. I wasn't out for any of that. But what I was out for, and this is the one thing I guess that would put me in the negative with him. I mean, that's because I had to expose it. The only thing I was out for was I was out when he became a king. And that's because I was a Kasinka. So I say all that to say this. I'm going to tell you about when I had to testify, what it was like for me, what the experience was like. You know, I'm going to try to lay it out for you. You know, when the time came, you know, we really felt, you know, amongst us, because obviously I wasn't the only one who was asked to testify, right? And amongst us, we had discussed it, you know, like, listen, whatever happens from here on out, like we, you know, we're in this shit to the end. Like we already made our decision, you know? And so it was understood what had to be done regardless. Like once you cross that line, bro, there's no coming back, you know, on either way, on either side, you know, once you make that commitment, you already crossed the guys, you know, you already crossed the fellas. There's no going back to that. Once you make that decision, I mean, theoretically, that's how it's supposed to be. Obviously, we've had many, many discussions about guys who go back anyways and are some who are even accepted back. But anyways, theoretically, you're done with that life once you make that decision. And then vice versa. Like, once you make that decision, you can't go back to the street. Because if you do anything to jeopardize what you've agreed to, then you're done, bro. You're anything you've ever agreed to is null and void. And so you basically are put in a position where you have to follow through on what you agreed to do. And so, you know, when they asked me, bro, it was really them telling me it was my turn up, you know, and I caught the shitty end of the stick because Tim and Toot obviously had conflicts of interest. Well, Tim did because of the lawyer that Beaky had, and Toot did because of another issue. Obviously, that's his brother, so he wasn't going to do anything. And then Benny, they didn't want to use him in the federal trial at that time. I don't know why. I think they would have used him eventually, but they didn't want to use him at that time. And so I ended up being the one out of us that had to do it. You know, I had to go. Obviously, there was a lot of other people that went. But I ended up being one of them. So you get like prepped, right? You get prepped for trial, but not in the sense that people think, at least not in my experience, where they think you're given all these stories to tell or anything like that. In my situation, bro, it was real simple. I just had to tell the truth about myself, because ultimately it was like I was on trial. And I'll explain that in a second. But so I'd be in these preps, and I remember one time I went down there. This is the crazy part. I never shared this, right? I remember Joey was there. And I went down there with a couple of other guys who they also were cooperating. You know what I'm saying? Mike was one of them. I think Gordy was one of them. They just happened to be in the – oh, no, it wasn't Gordy. It was Mike, though, for sure. I forgot who the other guy was. But he happened to be in the same county jail as me, and he was going down as well to get prepped. I explained how I felt about Mike. I didn't really care for him at all, but I dealt with him. And so I remember we were down there, and Joey's in the cell next to us. At this time, Joey was scheduled to go to trial. He was still on the, you know, on the list. It was Joey. He was one of the last guys to cop out. It was Joey, Beaky, and Icy. I knew it was because you can't see obviously into the holding cell next to you, but I ended up going out of my holding cell and walking past this holding cell to go to the lawyer rooms, because that's where the lawyer rooms are at. And so after I was done with my lawyer visit, I walked back and I seen him, and we like locked eyes. I could tell he was like a little bit, I don't want to say like shocked, you know, like necessarily shocked to see me, but he was like caught off guard by it, and we didn't have time to really like interact at all, because I'm just walking past. And so but you got to remember, like, we're in the holding cells right next to each other, and the doors and the whole wall in front is all mesh, so you can hear each other. You're right next to each other. And so I come back in the cell, and Mike and I do a thing. I think it was Gordy. I just think he was in a different jail. I don't think he was in the county jail with us. He just happened to come down there the same day. It had to be Gordy, because these dudes were always on joke time. Like, those two dudes, they were like little kids, you know, they were always on joke time. And I remember I was sitting on the bench, man, and I was like by the gate, and I kind of like called to him. I was like, Joey. He didn't answer. And I knew he heard me, you know what I'm saying? It was quiet. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of was like, hey, bro, you know, I was like, man, I don't know how you feel about us, you know, because you got to remember, like, we were close, bro. We were a close-knit group, you know, and, like, we talked about us as individuals really as a group, bro, because we were so tight, you know. Like, if you crossed one of us, bro, you crossed all of us, you know. Like, my crew was just, we were boys, man. We were tight. There was nothing that was going to come in between us. And even to that point, man, I felt like Joey was in that circle to some extent, you know. Mondi was in that circle to some extent, you know. So I just told him, like, man, you know, we still love you, dog, like, but we weren't going to be buried, dog, you know. And he didn't say nothing. And I was just like, you know, it's easy for everybody to point fingers and criticize when they face in 5 years, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of left it at that. And then like Gordy and Mike just start doing dumb shit, like making dumb sounds and like, you know, like just being antagonists, you know, because they know like he don't like them at all. Like with me, obviously it's different, bro, because there's heartstrings involved. With Gordy and Mike, it was more like a business relationship. Like he talked to him because they were kings, but he didn't really like to associate with them, you know, because they were, you know, they weren't our kind of kings. It was, you know, they just weren't. They were different. And so anyways, he never said nothing to me, bro. He never said nothing to me back. I remember after that day, they told me he copped out. He took a plea. The day comes and they come and get me early as shit, bro. I was in Waukesha, and they come get me. Boom, I go down to the Marshall building, and I'm down there, and I'm nervous as shit, bro. And I'm like, damn, dog, like my knees are shaking and shit. I feel like nauseous, you know what I'm saying? Just like super, I've never felt like that, bro. I'm usually super confident in a lot of different bad situations, I guess. But this situation was foreign to me, bro, the feelings. And I remember they came and got me. They called me and they're like, Vallejo, you know. And I'm like, yo. And they're like, all right, you ready? And so I'm like, I ain't got no choice, you know. And they, you know, it's super crazy how the Marshall building is designed. You know, like it's almost like when you can come in, you come in through the back. It's like a side entrance to the Marshall building. It's super low key. I think the Marshall building is actually like an old, they said it used to be a post office way back in the day, and it's a huge building. And the side entrance is for like, you know, inmates, and it's like super blended in and low key and crazy. It's like James Bond shit. And you come in through the side and then you go into another garage. So you come into the side and it's a garage, and you come in and there's like other cars, like a regular parking garage. And then there's another garage door that opens up, and then they back into that. And then you get out, you know what I'm saying? You go up and they let you into another building, another door, and then you're in the building. And then when you're in this part of the building, this is like where they do your mug shots and your fingerprints and just do like backup questions on you. And then they walk you straight. And then there's like one room way in the back to your left. And that holding cell is like that holding cell. They like to put people in there that can't act right in the courtroom, because you can like go to court on a monitor in there. And crazy shit is when I got indicted, they actually put me back there, and I was mad because they did it intentionally though. It's a mind game, bro. It's crazy how they work. But they put me back there by myself, and then all the other brothers were in these three holding cells, the common area ones, just where I was just talking about, like with being next to Joey. Like all the guys were in there, and they had me in back by myself when we got indicted. But anyways, so back to the story. So they walk you in, bam, they fingerprint you, they do all this shit, and then they put you in, you know, you take a right, and there's holding cells right there. And then like I said, when you come out of there, there's another row of doors, but it's just a little booth where you walk in and the lawyer comes through the other side and you have your little lawyer meeting. And so they come out and they get me, you know, you're in cuffs and you're in shackles and cuffs. And so they walk you and it's crazy. It's like this covert op. You go through this, like, it's like a maze. Like you go and then you go right and then you take a little left on a little hallway, and then the door is buzzed open and you get in there, you know, you walk through that door and then you walk straight and then you take a right. And then bam, there's a set of elevators and you got to like turn around while they put their key and their code in, you know what I'm saying? Then you're on the elevators and you're on the elevators with a couple marshals, you know, they're escorting you. And then all of a sudden the door pops open and you're in like a formal ass, like huge hallway, you know what I'm saying? And it's like super formal and everything is like, you know, almost look like crystals and gold. And it's crazy, bro, how the courthouse, the federal courthouse is, it's like really, really beautiful inside. And so, and you're walking down these long hallways that are, you know, marble floors, and you can hear the click, 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 like people walking, everybody's got business suits on and high heels, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's just, bro. And I'm like, I'm in awe of the place. And then I'm like super nervous and it's just crazy. And then like, we're walking, all of a sudden we take a right into like a little room, and it's just a little room with like a little couch, and it's just basically like a prep room. And then you're there, and then bam, all of a sudden the agent comes in, and the prosecutor comes in. They're like, "You ready?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I ain't got no choice." Like, you know what I mean? And they're like, "All right, listen, just be yourself, just be honest. And if you're nervous, just look at me." That's what he told me. He's like, "Just look at me the whole time." Because, you know, obviously the crowd, there's going to be people in the crowd. And unfortunately, in my circumstance, you know what I'm saying, there's people in the crowd that I knew, you know, because Beaky's like family, bro, you know. And even though I wasn't necessarily testifying on him individually, you know, my testimony was based on, I was a structure witness. I was a what they call the expert witness. So they used me for really the hierarchy. And this is the point I was making when I said I felt like I was on trial. So they walked me in. They had a door that specific. You walk in and you're immediately, the stand is right there, you know, and you take the stand and you go through that whole fucking bullshit process. And then, boom, bro, you're up there and you start getting asked questions. So in this case, bro, you know, this is why I felt like I was on trial, because we literally went through a lot of my history. You know, when I became a king, we went through all my crimes that I pled out to. Not all the crimes that I confessed to, but all the crimes I pled out to. And so we went through details. And, you know, so we're talking about murder. We're talking about attempted murder. We're going through details. I understand. It's like I'm executing myself up here. The jury is literally 5 feet to my right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just talking about, and I got to mind you, I'm not sentenced yet. You know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of nervous, but I'm literally just, everything's out there, bro. And I'm just talking about all my crimes. And then ultimately it gets to when I became in leadership and basically started breaking down the structure of the manifesto and the structure of the hierarchy of what we had going on. And, bro, it was crazy. I remember looking over, you know, they have like easels with, you know, like different pictures on there that they wanted to express. Like they had the manifesto blew up and the, you know, the shield and that is on the manifesto with the two lines and the, you know, so it was like crazy how it looked. It was like a movie, you know what I'm saying? Literally, like there was a huge table. I'm going to say a big, big table, bro. You know, maybe 15 feet long, 20 feet long. It's got all the guns they ever found from us. They ever captured from us, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm looking over there. I'm like, damn, bro, I remember that gun. I mean, some of my guns from, you know, way back in the day. I'm like, damn, man, like, oh, it's crazy, you know? So I just remember being like in awe, bro. And, you know, that was basically, I went there. I was there for, bro, the whole first half of the day was just me explaining my crimes and my involvement and then my role in leadership. And, you know, obviously they did ask me if I knew Beaky and you know, at that point, what can you really do? You know, I'm already to the bad, bro. You know, like I was in a really, really tough situation. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to do it, you know, just based on the way my heart felt, you know what I'm saying? And I had a conversation with Tim, and obviously I had to have a conversation with Toot. You know, that's his brother. Mm. And Toot just told me, like, bro, don't make that mistake that you'll regret for the rest of your life, you know, 10 years from now. She's like, you might feel good about the decision right now, bro, but 10 years from now when you're doing life, you'll regret it, you know? He was like, my brother wants to be a knucklehead, bro. He was like, we're not going to be the ones that bury him. We're not going to be the ones that bury him, bro. We weren't there for, and we weren't, you know, for his most egregious crime, the murder that he ended up ultimately being charged with. You know, what's crazy is the name of the game in the feds, I've said this a million times, is cooperation, bro. If he would have just came in and signed a proffer, he would have been able to talk about his murder under proffer, bro. And they would have probably gave him the 20 years, you know, maybe if that, especially that circumstance, bro. That circumstance for that murder was crazy. Like he did what any real friend would do, man. You know, Gordy standing in the gangway and a flake is walking up behind him in a hoodie about to shoot him, about to kill him. And he runs up behind him and kills him before he kills Gordy. You know, he did what a lot of people would do for their friend. The guy died with a gun on him that was going to kill Gordy, you know? And so, listen, man, he did an honorable thing, but he would have, obviously it's not right. You know, you don't want to say he killed somebody. That's the right thing to do, but he did an honorable thing in the nation, you know what I mean, at that time, you know, for what it stood for. And so, yeah, bro, you know, I remember too, just telling me like, bro, you know, he's going to regret that shit. You know, he's an idiot. Yeah. The truth is he could have probably he could have talked about it, got it under proffer. He would have got a sweet deal. He'd be out right now. Instead, he blew trial. He lost the trial, got 20 years in the feds. Then they charged him in the state for the murder anyway. And then they gave him 30 years.
Oh,
yeah. So thankfully, they ran it concurrent. So,
okay. Yeah, but that was going to be my question.
But here's the part, though. Here's the thing. Here's the slick part. He's got to do 100% of the time. Like in the feds, you do 80% of your time, 85% of your time. But in the state, you do 100% of your time. They got a 2/3 law, but they don't got a 2/3 law for murder. And so he's going to get banged out. You know, he's going to do, you know, he's got, you know, a bunch of years left, and it's fucked up. And here's the crazy part. The second day that I was there, they didn't end up needing me. I just came as like a just in case, and Beaky came down and he was going to be transported back to his county jail. And, he's like right there in a holding area, and I'm leaned up against the fence, you know, and I'm looking at him, bro. And you got to remember, I've known him, this dude, since middle school, you know, like we're boys, we're family, you know what I'm saying? And I just told him, I was like, Beaky, you know, like, I love you, bro. Like, I don't know why you chose against us, you know? And he just looked at me and he's like, I love you, bro. I love all y'all. He was like, I just had to do this for me. And I never understood that, bro. I never understood that until I got a little bit older and I started to look at his circumstances, bro. And I've explained the kind of brother that Beaky was, you know, he was a no-show kind of guy, and he never got the respect that Tube got. You know what I'm saying? He never got the attention. And, you know, in his mind at that time, he felt like probably standing up and going to trial would put him in that category, you know? But he just didn't realize he was throwing his life away for it. And he did, you know? And thankfully, he still has an out date. You know, he's going to be out one day. But, you know, listen, man, I had to live with that burden for a long time. You know, I felt like disgusted with myself for a while. And, you know, obviously there's no, in the street and there's, and just in life, there's really no justification. You know, you make a decision, you got to live with it. And, if I'm being honest, bro, I know at that time my decision was really, I felt like it was life or death, meaning life having a chance one time to walk freely again, or death in the prison, you know, in the prison yard. You know, that was literally my choice, bro. There was no in between. There was no, you know, there was nothing, bro. There was nothing else I could have did. You know, half of me says, with the things that I did in my life, maybe I should have died in a prison, you know, but the other half of me is always saying, listen, man, you were a kid. You know, you didn't know any better. And by the time you did, it was too late, you know? And so, I don't know. Different people are going to fall on different sides of it. I feel like I've become, you know, a good man behind it. Probably a better man than I would have ever been if I didn't get indicted. You know, I can say that. If I didn't get indicted, I definitely wouldn't be the man I am today. So, yeah, man, that was that experience, bro. You know, it was a crazy one. You know, it's hard to relive. You know, it's hard to go back to that day and go over that again, because I still get those feelings. I still get that uneasy feeling, bro, that lonely feeling. But like I said, at the time, it was just where I was at. Go ahead.
Have you ever talked to Peaky since that day? Just to kind of feel like what is his view on it now?
No, I haven't talked to him.
I assume Tude has, right?
Well, Tude has, but it's been sporadic. And you know, it's, you got to remember with Tootman, there's underlying issues there, bro. You know, it's crazy. They have a different dynamic as brothers, bro, if I can just put it like that. And so they've been through a lot of ups and downs together, and they have a different dynamic about how the relationship is than maybe like me and Tim are. And I feel like Beaky, he kind of shuns Toot now because he feels like he's got the one up on him. You know, like, I did this, you didn't. You know, as much as you said you were this, you weren't, and I am. And look, and what does he have to show for it? You know, he's got nothing. You know, he's got nobody, bro. You know, it's just a fucked up situation.
Yeah, and he's got to look at it now and not think that the decision he made was the right decision. Because what has it gotten him? It's just gotten him more time in prison. I mean, it's not like he's going to get out, let's just say 10 years from now, he gets out. It's not like he's going to go back and the Latin Kings are going to embrace him. You know?
That's just decimated right now. You know? And yeah, there'll still be some that claim it, but it's not going to be anything he's going to want to be a part of. Bro, I guarantee you he's regretting it already, bro. There's no way.
I'm sure
he's
a grown
ass man. Let me see. Beaky's probably, I think he's Tim's age. So I think he's 38. You know, happy birthday to my brother. It's his birthday today.
Is it really?
Oh. Yeah. My brother Tim is 38 today. And if I'm not mistaken, Peaky's birthday is this month too, but he's around his age, bro. I guarantee you he's woken up, bro, in them cells when your celly is snoring and farting all night. And you know what I'm saying, bro? And you ain't got shit. You ain't got no letters coming in. You ain't got no commissary. You ain't got nothing. I guarantee you he's woken up and been like, bro, what the fuck did I do with my life? Why? For what? You know? I pray, man. I pray that I see him one day, bro. And you know, he doesn't have any hard feelings. But I'm going to let him speak his piece. And, you know, obviously I'm going to have my point of view and whatever, you know. That's just the way it's going to be. But
I would just love to hear his perspective on it now, because I would think that at this point in time, he would look back at it and say that you did the right thing, and damn, he wishes he would have done what you did.
Listen, I mean, the funny part is talking about history repeating itself, bro. You know, we talk about the 98 and Damon. I've mentioned it before. My cousin Alex is one of the cornerstone witnesses. Now, like I said, there's no justification for what I did, but I do think there's levels to cooperation. You know, if I'm being fair about my situation and my cousin's situation, my cousin was in a different kind of situation. He knew he was done too. You know, he was a career criminal. He already had a murder in the state, and he's got four murders that he knows he's part of or responsible for. He made a decision, you know, a little bit differently. His decision kind of got everybody indicted, you know, but whatever, neither here nor there, tomato, tomato. And so Toot's brother was on that indictment, his oldest brother. And he went to trial, you know, at 15 and got double life. And, you know, I've mentioned him before. Good dude, you know, but the fucked up part is, you know, now he's there and, you know, he told Toot, listen, bro, save your own life. You know, I regret not making that decision when I had the chance, because he didn't. And he had the chance and he chose to stand up and he chose to go to trial. And that's a decision that he's waking up to every day, dog, for the rest of his life. And it's sad, bro. It's sad because to die in prison, dog, for something that nobody else is really willing to die in prison for, bro. People say they are, but a lot of the people that are dying in prison for that shit, they're forced into that, bro. They don't want to. Who wants to die in prison, bro? You know what I'm saying? Like, who wants to do that, dog? Nobody wants to die in prison. I'm not condoning being the type of dude that is telling on your friends and doing all this other shit. But understand that there's a difference in making a decision to save your life, bro, and being just your average person that's a tattletale. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at it from far away, like I look at it, I'm looking at it as completely a bystander, not having any emotion to it at all. It just seems like you, for anybody to look at you and say that you need to go to prison for life for the Kings, that's just completely not reasonable. And it's completely irrational that any person would ever take.
Yeah, and for any gang, bro.
Right.
You know, understanding that violence, that shit is bred in there, man. It's infested in those areas, bro. And it's not something that you can put a Band-Aid on. You know, you cut the head off the snake a million times, bro. It just grows back. You know, yeah, you decimate it, but it's still a different version of it. You didn't, and we talked about that before. You know, be careful what monster you create. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what I got, man. That's what I gizat. That's what I got. Hopefully you enjoyed that one. That was a unique one. It was different to relive that.
I do have one more question based just on the testimony. So, like, how long did your testimony last?
Shit, man. You got to think, bro. We're talking about, We talked about all the crimes I was charged with. We talked about my upbringing. We talked about when I became a king, when I became a Kasinka. Bro, I mean, you're talking about maybe like 8 hours.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
And what do you think? So you had mentioned about how you were just kind of scared shitless going out to do this. Where do you think that fear came from? Was it just the unknown of what you were going into? Was it the fact of, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah, I think it was all that. It was all about feeling like I was doing the extremely wrong thing. I second guessed it the whole time. I was nauseous the whole time. Yeah, it was all about just feeling like I was betraying everything I ever knew in my life.
And that would be a hard thing to do, even though it was the right thing to do because you now have a life because of it. But wow, what a tough thing to go through.
Yeah, I felt like that was it, bro.
All right. Well, that was quite a somber one. Everybody can wash away the tears. And
I don't think it was somber. I think it was just informative, bro. It was pretty informative.
It was a little depressing, man.
Damn. So, all right. Well, we're going to have to get feedback then. The guys will let us know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Everybody let us know. How was this? Was this just a wholly depressing episode or was it just good?
I think it was informative. I think it was informative. I think like, man, that was a lot of shit that I never knew went down.
Yeah. And just the way you tell it, it's just mind opening to try to put yourself. I'm trying to put myself in your situation and imagine what that would be like. And I can't even wrap my head around how that would feel, you know?
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
So, all right. Well, with that, I think we can wrap this one up unless you got anything else you want to throw out there, Berto.
No, I just want to thank the people that have been supporting us, man. There's some day oneers out there that have been supporting us for the longest. I know in this time, you know, it's not exactly economically stable in these times. And, you know, so for people to be, you know, avid supporters, I appreciate it. You know, I encourage the feedback all the time, the questions, whatever you got. And yeah, man, just appreciate it.
Totally. And I second everything Berto just said. So, but with that, we'll wrap this episode up and we'll be back next week with a regular episode and 2 weeks with another Patreon. We thank you everybody for your continued support and we'll see you on the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Normalized Crime. Stay tuned for the next episode.